You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Now we turn to Wayne State University law professor Peter Hammer, who directs the Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights. Always good to have you here, Peter.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We've been learning about Philadelphia's TAP plan, first of its kind in the nation, basing payment for water, not on usage, but income. But didn't Detroit activists come up with something similar in 2003?
Yeah, for over a decade, people have been fighting for water affordability here in Detroit. And the actual structure and design of the Philadelphia plan is really an export from Detroit.
And what happened? Why wasn't Detroit the one to say, hey, we're first in the nation to have this kind of plan?
I wish I had a good answer to that. Any city that wants to meet the needs of its citizens would want to embrace water affordability. And yet, while the activists and a number of academics have been pushing for water affordability in Detroit for a long time, it hasn't gotten the political traction. There was a version of the plan, a very watered-down version of the plan that was adopted and never effectively implemented. And the Duggan administration is running as far away from water affordability as it can.
And my understanding is this plan would have actually increased city revenues.
Yeah, now this is the irony. So this is like one of these few times in public policy where you have a win-win-win scenario. So if you structure a water affordability plan correctly, and if you accommodate the notion that people have to pay for water based upon, in some respects, their ability to pay, it's a classic form of price discrimination, right? And any monopolist wants to be able to price discriminate, because if you can price discriminate, you actually have greater revenue. And when the government can implement a plan like that, it can get greater equity and greater revenue at the same time.
Considering we have nearly half of Detroiters living in poverty, how is there no appetite for a plan that could help people, could even increase city revenues, and stop the turnoffs?
Yeah, and not only is there no appetite for that, there's a draconian policy of water shutoffs in Detroit. So rather than moving to water affordability, right, that would actually increase revenue in a very draconian way, what we're doing in Detroit is shutting off the water of tens of thousands of people and creating a public health emergency.
What is the Water Residential Assistance Program, RAP, the Detroit program? What is it? How does it work?
Yeah, what you want to think about is a difference between affordability and assistance, right? What Detroit has tried to do is move to various forms of assistance, which are really Band-Aids. And the people at the Detroit Water and Sewer Department will admit, what they're trying to do basically is to subsidize a sinking ship by getting outside revenue, either through philanthropy or otherwise, in order to make up the gap between how much a person is charged and how much they can pay. You know, that's like bailing water out of a sinking ship. It doesn't address the core root cause of the problem, and it doesn't guarantee sustainability in the intermediate or long term.
So there's not a program in Detroit that tackles the affordability issue. It's let's get you right on the books with the city.
Yeah, but what it does then is that it's like these bad payment plans that you have for predatory lending is not sustainable. So people sign up for the plan, right? They might stay on it for a while, but if the underlying problem, as you've said, is that we have 40-50% poverty rate in the city of Detroit, at some point they're going to fall off that plan, and then they're going to be back in debt, and then they're going to have their water shut off again. So it's this cycle, right? This sort of a very tragic cycle. It doesn't get to the root causes. And if you don't get to the root causes of the problem, you're not going to have a real solution.
And when city officials say, well, people get advance notice of pending water shutoffs, and they say more than 90% of people whose water is shut off pay something, get on a payment plan within 24 hours and the water gets turned back on. What's the real story under that?
Yeah, first off, you always have to interrogate the public narrative. I've seen reports where they don't gather that data, right? So it's very hard to know that claim that X number of people get back on within X number of hours is actually accurate. I'd love to see the data, and then we can examine it. What I do know, though, is they don't say that over the long term, right? You can cash in to your friends and get loans and get, you know, assistance in an emergency, right? And that's what many of these people do. The water shutting off is an emergency, and people go into emergency action. At that point, then they might be able to gather the resources to make the payment to get on the payment plan, but that doesn't deal with the fact that they can't meet any of the other bills. In many respects, what you're saying now is I'm going to pay my water, but I'm not going to pay for my medicine or my food or my rent.
That's actually when I talked to Rob Ballinger from the Philadelphia Community Legal Services, he said, yeah, maybe they're paying it, but at what cost? Payday loans, whatever. And then you talk about the ripple effect with people losing homes or people at risk of losing kids. And I bet a lot of people hearing this narrative of water shutoffs on Detroit don't realize it goes beyond just I can't get water to brush my teeth.
No, and it's very important to know. There's a recent study by the Henry Ford Health System that showed that there's a direct correlation between water shutoffs on a block, right, and the incidence of waterborne illness and soft tissue infections. And that's what I say. What we really have is a burgeoning public health emergency, and we're not addressing the root causes of the problem.
And then people can lose their children if they're living in a home without water.
Yeah. So that, I mean, people can say, well, why aren't people talking about it? The minute a household that has children and it says that they don't have water, that's a predicate for losing their children, right? So you have this irony that the people who are being most affected are most in fear of ever coming out and talking publicly. And that's separate and apart from all the shaming that gets done on for people who have to admit that they're having trouble paying their bills. But if you look at systems and not individuals, what you have here is a convergence of all sorts of failed systems, the job system, the education system, the transportation system in Detroit, and it's our collective responsibility to have compassion and humanity in dealing with people who are stuck in those broken systems.
And I can hear you say, and feel free to say it, you're not hearing that humanity coming out of City Hall.
No, these are all values, right? The core question is, what is our value? Do we have a commitment to each other? And rather than having a compassionate commitment to the historic residents of Detroit, we've adopted all sorts of policies that focus on displacement. We've closed over 100 schools in the city of Detroit. We have over 100,000 tax foreclosures, and we have tens of thousands of people who have had their water shut off. That's not the society I want to live in.
And a payment plan doesn't address problems with people being unable to afford the water, or people who were paying on time to landlords who didn't bother paying the water bill, but they didn't know that until they were punished by the water being shut off.
Yeah. And the key thing for your listeners to know is there's a huge difference between assistance and affordability. Affordability, which is the basis of the original Detroit proposal and what's going on in Philadelphia, leads to sustainability, right? Mm. Assistance is a Band-Aid. And the people at the Detroit Water and Sewer Department will admit that. They'll also admit, and I've seen this stated twice, in presentations that I've attended, that they don't even have the money on the assistance level to deal with half of the real needs, right? So we're providing assistance, which is a Band-Aid, and we don't even have enough money on assistance to deal with the scope of what the real needs are.
Could we take that Philadelphia program, the TAP plan, and put it into effect here in Detroit?
If we had the will. Now, I mean, I wanted to raise the issue of the Headley Amendment, which is what the Water and Sewer Department, the mayor, beat everybody's head over when they hear about affordability. You can structure a plan of affordability that could meet the Headley Amendment.
And break down what that, to refresh everyone's memory.
The Headley Amendment talks about the difference between a fee and a tax, and if it's classified as a tax, it says that it has to be subject to a public referendum. Right. And any good lawyer, right, if you went to a law firm, right, if we actually went to Jones Day and said, solve a problem for us, good lawyers could help us design a plan that could meet the requirements of the Headley Amendment. It's also possible to design plans that don't. But the question is there political will? And secondly, even if it did trigger the Headley Amendment, why don't we have a public referendum? Why don't we take this to a vote? So there's all sorts of legitimate paths forward, and what we have, rather, is people who are slamming these doors and making excuses on why we're not going to act in a humanitarian fashion.
Talk to those listening who see this pretty much as a problem of people who just don't pay their bills. How is this a civil rights issue?
Yeah. No, the key thing is that we often use debt to have forms of social control, right? And the best example I would say is go back to sharecropping. Right? Sharecropping was a system that guaranteed that I kept people in debt and in their debt had them under my control. Right? And I would suggest, and this is not said enough, that what we really have, and you can think about emergency management, you can think about the bankruptcy plan of adjustment, you can think about the water shutoffs, is exactly that same kind of dynamic of using debt as a means of social control. The minute I can frame it as debt, I have three millennium of moral shaming that makes the individual and not the system responsible. I would also compare the water shutoffs with the tax foreclosures. There was a good New York Times editorial over the weekend, and there's been good research that shows the tax assessments have been radically overassessed, illegally overassessed, and people have been losing their homes for unlawful assessments. And yet the same frame is applied to the people with the tax assessments, right? You don't pay your taxes, you shouldn't have your home. And I have to say, we have to look at the dysfunctional systems, and we have to look at individuals stuck in dysfunctional systems, and we have to come back compassionately with holistic, sustainable solutions to those problems.
Peter Hammer is a professor at the Wayne State University School of Law, where he directs the Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights. Peter, thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure.
We asked the director of Detroit's water department for an interview. So far, Gary Brown's office has not responded to our request.